Welcome to Crane Radio. Celebrate a life well lived.
Welcome to this first season of The Modern Crone, the 21st Century Shaman. I have invited the most powerful, eclectic and woke shamanic folk I know to talk with me about their take on shamanism and tap you straight into the minds and hearts of those who are the real deal 21st century shamans. Real people, real stories and a whole lot of mind-blowing, spirit-stirring juju. Miguel Cavlin was born in La Paz, Bolivia, where he lived until he was 17 years old. Upon finding himself in the United States to study university, he started to have unusual experiences, which eventually led him to become interested in Native American culture and religion. Miguel's spiritual path has led him to studying and participating in various ceremonies with beautiful painted arrow, Joseph Rael, leading him to eventually inherit the title of chief for both the Sun Moon Dance and the Long Dance with Sacred Cactus of the Andes. Training with Kenny Gong, an international martial arts teacher and traditional Chinese doctor, in the arts of Xing Yi, Chuan, and Pa Kwa, this training has provided Miguel with a very serious grounding to all of his spiritual practices, and eventually to an apprenticeship with Don Agustin Rivas Vaquez in his jungle camp. Now Miguel is the only foreigner authorized by Don Agustin to conduct his ceremonies outside the Peruvian Amazon. And since 1995, Miguel has also been apprenticing with Don Hector Aguanari and Don Jose Corral. Amongst his many incredible achievements, Miguel has completed graduate studies in anthropology and philosophy. He has set up a non-profit agency that works with New York City's public school students in multicultural awareness, violence prevention, adolescent rites of passage, and various other educational programs. He has produced a three-part video documentary on Peruvian Amazonian shamanism, entitled Spirits of the Rainforest, featuring interviews with Don Agustin Rivas Vaquez and the paintings of Don Pablo Amaringo. Miguel started the Satyruna community in Bolivia 25 years ago, and it's dedicated to helping people heal disorders and learn to serve using practices and teachings from the Amazonian and Andean traditions, Native North American, Buddhist, Sikh, and Judeo-Christian traditions and teachings. Miguel's deepest prayer is to truly be of service to the collective in the most profound ways possible. Miguel Cavlin, it's such a pleasure to have you on our first season of The Modern Crone. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure and an honor. I hope I can be of service.
I'm sure you will. I can't wait to start this discussion with you. So, Miguel, we met a few years ago on the shores of Lake Titicaca in Peru, where you taught us and guided us in ceremony, and you made just a massive impression on my mind and heart. And what really piqued my interest in you is particularly, first of all, your Jewish roots, and also this integration that you have from many different traditions and frameworks within you and within your teachings. And in our previous discussions, you've referred to this as the tastes of God. And I love this approach, as there's no right and only taste of God. Could you tell us a bit more about this integration within your journey and within how you teach?
Yes, thank you. That question is very close to my heart. I think really what Satyruna is about is precisely integrating and building bridges and uniting the different spiritual traditions, because as much as there are different tastes of God, I think the truth is, one, there is a universal consciousness that manifests and expresses itself through various textures, tastes, colors, and of course, in different parts of the world. I don't think God forgot any of his people in any region and manifested through very different practices and gave people ways to connect to source. And I also, early on in my path, experienced a revelation of sorts where I understood that everything was perfect. Everything was permeated by this divine presence in a way that made everything perfect and meaningful. So each of the teachers that have showed up on my path came for a reason. Also in the Dzogchen teachings, Namkhai Norbu Rinpoche taught us about the capacity to integrate. Of course, it depends also on the person integrating. Not everybody can do that. And it really is just as valid as walking one path. Some people say, oh, you have to walk one path thoroughly to the end to manifest the fruit. Other people can derive meaning and teachings and purpose from different paths and yet also derive the fruit. While there's people who walk only one path just superficially to feed the ego and feel a little more comfortable and appease their conscience, maybe. And there's also people who walk many paths also superficially. And of course, the New Age movement has oftentimes been criticized for doing that. People who pick and choose from here and there and then write a big book and make money from it. But I think the bottom line of it is how earnestly, diligently, sincerely, and authentically you walk and keep each of the teachings that you receive. I am Jewish, and I've always had, even though I wasn't brought up very much within a religious family or within the religious tradition, I always felt a deep devotion in my heart. And I think ultimately it is about wholeheartedness. And there was this Lakota medicine man whose book touched me deeply as I started on my path. It's called Black Elk Speaks. And he was a Lakota prophet. And he had this vision of how the hoop of life, meaning the medicine wheel, meaning the harmony of creation and of existence, would be reconstituted and healed when the four races of the world, meaning and representing all the races in the world, would come together as one. Mm. And I've taken that wholeheartedly.
You sure have.
And it is always a pleasure. You know, just a couple of days ago, I was thinking about that. I don't know why it came to my mind. But, you know, even in some spiritual traditions, they say, oh, you know, I follow this path, and this is my God, and I don't bow to anything else. And of course, the ego grabs onto any spiritual tradition and makes us believe that somehow we are superior, right? It feeds our ego to believe, oh, my path is best, and other people's path is inferior, and therefore I am greater. And of course, that's the ego speaking, because I believe within any spiritual authentic tradition, we must come to the understanding that we are all one and to see God everywhere.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, you know, wherever I go, you know, an African spiritual ritual, a Hindu spiritual ritual, a Sikh spiritual ritual, I bow and I connect and I pay respects and I honor. And of course, there's paths that do harm, and I don't delve into those. but I think we should try to see God everywhere. And, you know, as the shamanic and Native American traditions were oftentimes criticized by the Christian colonizers, you know, for example, the Sun Moon Dance, which dances around the Tree of Life, they would say, oh, they're worshiping a tree.
Yeah.
But no, they're not worshiping a tree. They're worshiping God within the tree, and the tree becomes a vessel of light from God. And if we can, and Dzogchen also teaches that, if you get into your primordial nature of your mind, the state of Rigpa, the state of enlightenment, if you can get there, then you recognize that the ant, the tree, and the cloud, and of course other people, also carry that. Yep. It's the same nature. And to get to recognize that and to have that caring, loving, compassionate consciousness that make us all one, where you bond with all creation in a meaningful, respectful, and honorable way, is the way that I think will carry us forward as humanity upon this planet.
Absolutely. So beautifully put. But I want to move on to this next point with you, Miguel, which we've talked about before as well, and that there's this consistent theme that's come up in these podcasts that I'm doing for this series, that the real shamanic way is all about embodiment. It's about bringing spirit to earth into our lives, into our awareness, into our phenomenal reality. Whereas I think there can be like a common misconception around shamanism that it's the opposite, that it's about escaping reality. It's about not having any challenges in life. It's sort of like tripping the light fantastic, if you like. And could you talk a bit more with us about this bringing spirit to earth aspect of shamanism?
Sure, of course. there's no other way. Of course, within the Native North American tradition and also all Amazonian, Andean, and actually every spiritual tradition, one thing they say, for example, is if you get a vision, you must materialize it. You must manifest it. If you see a pattern, you draw it. You make it into pottery. You make it into a weaving. You manifest it. Mm. So manifestation, of course, is crucial. And embodiment, of course, we are, what is our body? Is this intersection between the state of perfection and freedom that is eternal and lives within us always, and the illusory world of samsara and density and suffering that we're all inserted in and that we live and share time and space with. And so we all have this not only opportunity, but I think a responsibility to become hollow bones, to, as they say in the sun dance, in the sun moon dance, right? We become hollow and we allow the great spirit to blow beautiful melodies through us to bless all of creation. Mm-hmm. So if we can become pure channels of divine light, if we can manifest another economy, politic, consciousness, logic to in our being, we are also irradiating and affecting all of our time and space that we share with others and have a massive impact. So that is in many ways the call that beckons us forth to take a great leap forward in our spiritual growth. And yes, these are special times, and they have been special times in the fact that people have shared these teachings. But also, they're special times because we can see with COVID, I think it's a wake-up call, and hopefully it won't require 10 pests for us to be free, but can heed the call as soon as possible. Mm. Now there's a particular urgency. It's maybe the survival of humanity and the planet at stake. And really, there's, of course, there's political action, social action, and activism. But the main responsibility is to connect to the mystery and let it guide us.
Yeah.
Because if it is from the ego that we will take action, we will just keep on muddling the pond. But if we do connect to source, if we surrender to source, if we allow source to inspire us, to order us, to move us, then we will be manifesting the logic of liberation, the logic of freedom, of emancipation, of the Garden of Eden, which is our birthright and which we must do now.
I agree.
I absolutely agree
with that. And I've been writing about exactly this, you know, for the last year. And but I think you can see it happening. It's slow, but it's happening. But let's talk about the work you do in your centres, because you're really at the edge of this, aren't you? So people come to your centres in Bolivia and Peru from all over the world, and some are seeking healing, some are seeking to touch the transcendent, some are seeking to... They're just acting on a prompt, aren't they? They've been moved for a deeper immersion. So how would you describe the work that you're doing? And you've got a current group there now, haven't you, from that have been long stay. So how would you describe the work that you do in your centres?
Well, different people come for different reasons, some for curiosity, some for healing particular ailments, some for spiritual transcendence, teaching and liberation.
Yep.
But it doesn't matter what one thinks one comes for.
Yep.
I believe that people are drawn for a reason, and those who come are just the right people that need to come. But in terms of our approach, of course, our ultimate aim is liberation, is precisely that, you know, healing what blocks us from experiencing our true nature, connecting to source, surrendering to source, and allowing source to manifest and flower within us so that we can bless all of creation through our being. And not teach in a dogmatic way what and how people should live, but allow people to have this direct experience with source through the various teachings from the different traditions that we have received that can help people with their particular individual conditions.
Fantastic.
And allow them to begin to weave their own meaning and their own rhythm and rhyme to their life.
Yeah.
Some people need to be vegetarian, others maybe not. Some people need to dance, other people need to be still.
Yeah.
So,
but it's about enabling that sort of conscious choice of living, isn't it? So actually living consciously, living in a spirited life.
Yes, yes. But of course, the work of finding silence and stillness and surrender and connecting to the mystery within and allowing it to flow and to flourish unimpeded within us is no easy task. Of course, the ego always wants to derail us and always will in its countless manifestations, ever more subtle, but nonetheless still mischievous. So,
yeah, well, I say that that to my classes as well, you know, and my students, and they engage in my processes and stuff. I just go, we never really arrive, you know, we don't arrive, but we move into fully and deeply a flow and a journey. And I think that's a really good paradigm shift to have when you're moving into spiritual inquiry, is that it's not like this fixed thing that you're going to be fixed. It's this ongoing, beautiful continuum of expression, as you say. I love that expression of spirit blowing the melody through you into life. So you when we met, you held space for my first experience with ayahuasca, and it changed my life. And it's still, that experience with you and with the plant medicine is still informing my understandings, my continued learning. And shamanism in some people's minds is very closely associated with plant medicine. And I'd love for you to tell us what your view of the role of plant medicine is in the process of connecting with spirit. You know, is it essential?
Well, essential I cannot say, and probably not, because it's not for everyone. However, it is, I believe, a most precious and divine gift. It's a divine sacrament that has a liberating potential and a healing potential that is really to be honored, and for those who feel the call, really. When I first met ayahuasca, I said, wow, this is the medicine for our times, because Westerners don't have the time and the inclination to go for, you know, 5-year retreat in a monastery in the Himalayas, and would hardly have the discipline to do it. And what it does, and what it's most appropriate for, because most of us in our spiritual growth, even though, as I said, you know, the ego likes to feel like it's doing something good, but never to completely surrender and let go. Yeah. So we all stay within our zone of comfort. But this pushes us way beyond our zone of comfort. It breaks down the walls of the subconscious and unconscious and superconscious so that we can face our truth nakedly. Yeah. Some people scoff at the use of medicine plants because they say, oh, it's a shortcut in the spiritual path. Well, it's not a shortcut. The only reason you do take a great leap forward and advance faster is because you're taking a very naked encounter with your own reality, with your own traumas, and are able to liberate them in a way that's much faster than years of therapy or years of different spiritual practices. However, I do think that this needs to be accompanied with a serious and diligent spirit, everyday spiritual practice and discipline, yeah. Right? Some people take a great leap forward with the plants and then feel the blessing of the plant. And all of a sudden they think, oh, I'm empowered. I'm already achieved a great spiritual level. Yeah. Begin to believe themselves to be great. And of course, what that does is that the ego has just derailed the whole sacredness of the experience and perverted it in ways that will block the spiritual growth of the individuals. So that is something to also be very much aware of. As the Kabbalists teach, you can only hold as much light as you have earned. You can only hold the light if you have built the vessel.
Yes.
And it's great to come to an ayahuasca ceremony and have a revelation, but one must also do one's diligent work to be able to hold it and channel it, and also keep a watchful eye, because the worst thing that could happen, of course, is that that it feeds and aggrandizes the ego, yeah, instead of helping us to surrender the ego.
Yeah, I understand that, and I agree. And one thing that I there were so many aspects to that particular time with you in Peru, but I mean, one thing that was very notable for me was just within the ceremony and since the ceremony, and we had a number of different forms of ceremonies on that trip. A direct dialogue established in my mind and in my spirit with the spirit of the ayahuasca. She was like this, a commentator on visions. She's pointing out aspects in my awareness, answering my questions as I experience the journey. And I think this is a really important thing for people to also understand, that plant medicine is not just about the pharmacy, like the chemistry of the experience. There's an intelligence field, or the spirit of the medicine that we actually commune with, isn't there?
Absolutely. I always say it's a powerful, intelligent, and benevolent spirit.
Yep.
However, we must also recognize that some people use it for harm. So it can blend bend itself to negative purposes. In the way that we work, we like to say that it combines itself with the divine presence to help us achieve the highest purpose.
Yep.
So a lot really depends on the facilitator, yep, and the connection that the facilitator, male or female, brings to the ceremony. The ayahuasca experience is not just the ingestion of the plant. It's also the ritual and the energy connection that is being held.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So here's another question that different shamanic practitioners that I've spoken to have different views on, and that is, when engaging with plant medicine, how important is it to go into the ceremony with an intent?
I think the main intent, of course, is to face oneself and to surrender.
Yeah.
And that should be the greatest purpose. Of course, it's important to pray with all your heart for whatever it is you're asking for. And some people really need urgent matters addressed.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, if they pray wholeheartedly, they are addressed. But other times, of course, we have very limited consciousness. So we think that the way to address it is one way, and the medicine surprises us by taking us on a whole different journey than we expected.
Yeah.
And of course, there was this one medicine in the Native American church with peyote that I shared with a long time ago. And one of the great teachings that he, as simple as it is, taught was always stay one step behind the medicine. Let the medicine guide. Yeah. And yes, it is an intelligent, powerful, and benevolent spirit. And one must pay attention and allow.
Yeah, you know,
and everything will come to fruition.
Yeah,
to
absolutely.
The rightful place.
What amazed me in my experience was how lucid the conscious connection with the spirit of the plant was. That's what I didn't expect. I didn't expect, and I know it's different for everybody, but I didn't expect such a felt presence within me and such clear guidance as to what I was experiencing within the ceremony, and since then too. Since then, it's I felt the plant, I felt her, and I just didn't expect that, and it was beautiful.
Sunrise yoga, midday brunch and farmers market, and an evening wedding ceremony and reception. Imagine how many different activities you can do in one place, in one day. Well, with Crane, you don't have to imagine. Host a pop-up, workshop, wedding, marketplace, and so much more, all under one roof. Quote Crane Radio for a special discount on your next space rental.
Now, you mentioned, Miguel, as well, the importance of the space holder. And immediately when we met, I felt very, very safe with you. I love the way you teach. I love the way you phrase things. I can get the way that you explain things, which is great for me. So I felt very, very safe with you. But your Icaros and all those crazy instruments there that you had on hand and just the sound wave that you generated continuously, really. I mean, there were moments of silence, but it was absolutely, in my experience, an interplay between your voice, the sound wave you were generating, the moments of silence, the way the medicine was working through me. And how important is, I mean, I think it's essential, obviously. You do it. This is what you do. This is your offering. How important is it is the space holder, the master, if you like? You probably don't like that term, but the one who really knows the spirit of the plant and also the sound that you generate. How important is that?
Oh, it's all important. I think the way that I work, at least, different people have different capacities and abilities. And, of course, the way you connected was also a gift. Some people are more sensitive. Some people are more visionary. Some people are more acoustic. But it's all vibration. It's all vibration, right? Joseph Rael, beautiful painted arrow, has this beautiful book, Being on Vibration. And, of course, if all matter is energy and all energy is vibration, the vibration is key. And that's what mantras are all about, creating a vibration within you, and some vibrations take you to the ultimate goal.
Yep.
What I try to do is get out of the way and become a hollow bone and allow the connection to flow. And, of course, that comes through with all the sounds. And all the sounds... Lamka Norbu used to teach, you know, of course, there's the sacred mantras and the sacred vibrations, which affect all your different, not only chakras, but points, with energy points, intelligence points within your being. But then he used to teach also that you could take a Tibetan folk song and also experience enlightenment. So sound in itself is, of course, great, but if you're connected with source, in some way and allow source to flow, then I just completely try to get out of the way and trust.
Yeah, and that's observable, I think. Like I was, the times that I was lucid actually in the room, I could see you almost waiting and listening, and then you'll almost sometimes it felt like you'd change direction. You'd pick up an instrument, but then you put it down again and pick something else up, or you'd start. You could definitely see you were being guided by something. You weren't thinking about it. but there was one point where you did walk past me, and I had returned in the ceremony back to my physical body, back to the space, and you walked past me with a little string instrument. It looked like a little ukulele or something. It was a lovely little thing. And as you walked past, I absolutely saw the spirit of the instrument itself. And and you explained that to me later as I had a flash, a glimpse of the principal idea of the instrument. And that concept, and now for me, quite an active reality of the principal idea within phenomena, within objects, within events,
yes. Is
now my subject of obsession. I'm obsessed with it. And when I meditate at the dawn, I open to the principal idea within that dawn. And it's changed my life. So could you tell us, in your words, what did I see in that instrument? What is the principal idea?
Well, the principal idea one understands in ways that are not language-based.
Yeah.
So it's hard to articulate it in that way. But beautiful Peteraro, again, he's the one that always spoke about principal ideas. And there's the principal idea of each particular tree, or of the concept of sitting or walking or standing, the principal idea of each thing. And he once gifted me, for example, a rattle. And I had in one ceremony an experience of transcendence with the instrument, where I entered the space of the principal idea of the instrument. Mm. I cannot articulate what it means or what it is. And it's the same with many different instruments in my life that I have gotten to have that level of intimacy with, where it opens up a space of revelation and meaning and intimacy, which is hard to describe, really.
I understand, because it's not human, is it? It's beyond human. So it's – but the other inquiry that conversations with you have opened up for me is also, what's my principal idea? What's the principal idea of me? And that's been a whole source of beautiful pondering as well and exploration. So do we have a principal idea too?
Great question. Yes, I think we all come marked in some way, right? We all have particular gifts. We also have particular weaknesses and things we need to work on, which are in this particular life. But of course, the principal idea of all is source.
Yeah.
So even though we can get caught up with the fascination of the phenomenon, and of course in plant medicine that can happen a lot, you get to explore unknown worlds, colors, textures, and forms that are fascinating, but one must not get lost in them either.
Yeah.
Eventually, in the silence and the stillness, in the surrendering of the ego, hopefully we glimpse the one reality that binds it all. And I think, and letting that flow and express itself through us in the particular taste of God that we are. Yes, we are a principal idea, and that universal consciousness will express itself through us in a particular way. And we need to discover what that is. And that is surrendering to the mystery, because we certainly do not know who we are, what we are, and who we are and what we are can change every minute. If we allow source to flow unimpeded through us, then we will respond perfectly to the circumstances. And of course, the circumstances will demand something different of us at each moment. Yeah. And source will know what that is in its perfection.
Yeah, good.
So again, becoming empty and letting source flow unimpeded through us, I think, is where we all need to get to, and be in awe of who we are and be in awe of all that is.
Beautiful. So you've just put out the call again, or the invitation again, to your retreats at Satcharuna. And we're going to put links to what you're opening up at both your retreats in the Amazon and also in Bolivia. But could you tell us a little bit about, the invitation's open from August this year, is it? Or any time that someone can turn up leading into the solstice next year, is that correct?
Yes, I think I sent you maybe the invitation from last year, which stated August as a time when Bolivia was going to open its borders. But this actually came out through COVID.
Okay.
Because I was in lockdown mode in Bolivia and doing ceremonies by myself. And all of a sudden I was instructed to begin to serve the people and started to go out and do ceremonies locally. We have been working for 25 years very much with the local population as well as the international visitors. Mm-hmm. But I also got the inspiration, which we hadn't done before. We were doing twice a year a month-long retreat as well as the shorter retreats. But I got the inspiration to call people who, in these times of COVID, would be committed to taking a great leap forward in their spiritual growth. And so we called for people at a very discounted price to come down for 3 months or more. And of course, most of the people that showed up as soon as the Bolivian border opened for 3 months have stayed on. And some of them are in their sixth month or their ninth month retreat.
Amazing.
And really, really surrendering and manifesting their path and their way to serve.
Beautiful.
So yes, it's been incredible. And that's what the call is about. We're hoping that the right people will come who are called to service and to help give birth to the new time, which we have had a revelation of the Condor and the Eagle prophecy a few years back, which we now are seeing manifesting, which is that the new time, the time that all of humanity was always longing for, you can call it the time of the Messiah, you can call it Pachacuti, which is the new time, the new earth, the new heaven, is here and now, is accessible to all, but it requires people who choose to give birth to it by allowing themselves to give birth to their new selves. And whoever feels that call is welcome. I think we have an incredible opportunity here in terms of the two places, one in the Amazon, one in the Andes, the people that help to facilitate the ceremonies. We're a few shamans working together. The combination of medicines and ritual practices and wisdoms from different traditions that we bring to bear. So in the retreats, he's not only working with ayahuasca, also with huachuma, some other plants which are very sacred that we don't talk about, and also devotional meditation practice from the Sikh tradition, Buddhist teachings, etc., that we are sharing with people to help each one achieve that goal in their own way.
It's fantastic. And it's massively generous too. So it's reasonable, but also you're saying, you know, if you find yourself where you've got some limited finance or abundance, just make us an offer. Which is rare to see, you know. And so I'm coming. So I can't wait to see you. And I'm planning for early next year, but I will talk to you offline around the solstice ceremony in June. Maybe I time it to that.
For this year or next year?
No, it'll have to be next year because I can't. Okay. I can't get back into Singapore if I come. So yet, but right. I think that'll change. So I'm planning for next year. So Miguel, I've concluded these podcasts by asking everybody the same question, which is, for people listening to this, and I know they're going to be stirred, and I know they're going to want to understand more about how you teach and what you teach and so on. But if for any reason they can't travel, and but they're stirred to start to open up their spirit to the shamanic way, to a connection with source, with great spirit, to open up their spirit bed to allow that river to flow. If you could give them like two or three great things that they could just start doing today, what would they be?
Devotional meditation. And I will give you now a little brief guided meditation, which is very, very simple. And it will use a particular word, which is a divine name gifted to me directly from a true saint, Babaji Baldev Singh from the Sikh tradition. But he is much more than any tradition. He's one who has manifested the fruit of the path. A true saint means somebody who has fully merged with God, with the divine consciousness, and who devotes themselves only to service. And so, therefore, the fruit of the path is certainly ascertained by me, and I have full faith in it. And as we mentioned before, vibration is all. So therefore, if the journey of the human consciousness is to extricate ourselves from the dense and vibration of suffering and reach the vibration of the divine, as Kabbalists and many traditions also teach, you have to have similarity of form. That means you have to vibrate at a level in which you can be coupled with the divine consciousness. And so using this vibration, we should be able to eventually reach that level where we can become one with the divine hollow bones, empty vessels, and channel the divine light. But of course, it will take, like any relationship, they speak, this is the path of union with God through love. Yeah. And they speak of the relationship between the bride and the beloved. And as any relationship of a couple, it requires a commitment and discipline, right? At first, you hold the hand of your girlfriend or boyfriend and are not sure how it's going to go. And little by little, you develop more trust and you develop more commitment, and the fire that was very tenuous at first grows into a blazing, all-consuming fire. Yeah. And that's how we should approach this meditation. So the guided meditation is basically to sit with a straight back and inhale, exhale three times to let go of all the tensions, and then to look and search within ourselves for the time in your life when you might have prayed with all your heart. So we're looking for that sensation and that place within us. And we can briefly pray with all our hearts, but then we should go into the silence and the stillness, always keeping our focus on that place and that sensation, but not relate to it anymore as if it was our prayer, our devotion, our love, but as if it was the divine presence live within us, as if it was the flame of a candle and us nothing but the butter that melts upon the heat that feeds the fire, which grows ever bigger and takes a life of its own. And all we do is surrender, observe and allow, observe and allow, observe and allow. And so we should be sitting like that in silence for a long while. But then at some point, with that feeling and that sensation, we should begin to pronounce this name, and I will sing it for you briefly. Wahe Guru, 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 and then go back into the silence and the stillness and feel the divine presence within us, moving and alive, and welcome it and feel it. Of course, this was the short instruction. One should do it for long periods of time, the silence previous, which we should get to feel wholeheartedly and full of emotion. Babaji says, even to the point of crying, the longing to your beloved. And then pronounce and chant the name in those two modes that I just shared with you for long periods of time, and then going back into the silence and the stillness. So if we can do that and commit to doing that, maybe 40 minutes twice a day when we wake up and when we go to bed, and develop that space, that sacred space of communion with ourselves, our truth, and our beloved. And enter the silence and the stillness and pay attention. Most of us pray, but we seldom believe that there can be an answer to our prayer. And we never think that the presence of the divine can be here and now. And yet it can. So if we develop that practice of dedicating time in our lives to quieting our mind, surrendering our ego, and paying attention to the divine so it can manifest both from the depth of our being and also from all around us, we will begin to feel that it stirs alive within us, something that is not who we believed we are, and begin to discover this magical journey and allow it to take birth within us, to begin to permeate all our being, to express our truth, to transform our consciousness and our body and our vibration.
What a gift. What a gift, Miguel. Thank you so much. This it's a mantra of the heart, that, isn't it? Like, I could feel my heart center opening with your voice. And that's the thing, isn't it? That's the longing for the beloved, that feeling. That's
yes.
That's super beautiful. Miguel, I have a feeling we may have to do a second podcast because I've still got about 400 gazillion questions to ask you that I would love to talk with you about. But I'm super grateful for your time and for you sharing with us some of your wisdom and some of your perspectives. And very happy that you're putting out the invitation again to your centres for people who are called to do the work, and we'll make sure that they've got your details. But Miguel, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's really a pleasure and an honour, and I ache to see you again. So please come.
I'm coming. Don't you worry. I'm aching too.